Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is produced in part by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 221 of the podcast with Penny Parker Klosterman, author of There Was an Old Dragon Who Swallowed a Knight, a book that gets requested a lot at bedtime around our household. Penny was recently recognized for Dragon at the first annual Rhyming Revolution Conference, held in early December, where her debut picture book was named Best Rhyming Picture Book. One read through Dragon, and I think you'll understand why. The rhymes seem easy, natural, and almost effortless. Qualities that are always cues that a whole lot of editing and thought went into making the manuscript just right. Enjoy the chat. Here's episode number 221 of the podcast with Penny Parker Klosterman. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Penny Parker Klosterman. I am excited to talk to you.
And I'm so excited to be here. I listen all the time.
I read your book all the time.
Yay!
Probably, one, because it rhymes so well, and two, because it's got a dragon on it. So how can any dad or kid resist reading books about dragons, especially when they're swallowing so many things?
Well, I'm hoping that nobody can. Nobody can resist it.
Penny, for the listening audience that isn't familiar with your book yet, you wrote a fantastic picture book called There Was an Old Dragon Who Swallowed a Knight, which so perfectly is illustrated by Ben Mantle.
Yeah, he is fabulous. I just feel like I hit the jackpot.
The artwork so well in this book, like it could be animated. It could be an entire like wonderful little Disney animated short. It just is beautiful.
Yes, that sounds good to me.
Hey, all right, Disney. So we'll get Disney on the line. I'm sure they're all listening. No, it's wonderful, and I love when picture books end up like this. And I think a lot of them do, because when you trust in the process that is publishing, good things can happen. And in this way, you've got this wonderful picture book that just hits on all the right notes for illustration and for rhyme and for, well, the story. Do you mind if I share what the story is? I feel like I'm dancing around it. Or would you like to share?
Oh, I'd love to hear it from you. That'd be great.
Sure. Well, having a five-year-old at home, and pardon my sniffles, I'm getting over a cold, but we could talk about that. That's all teaching, Penny. I know you know all about teaching and getting sick.
Yes,
from the children you work
I
with.
Do.
Who all want to hug you even when the snot is dripping down their face. As my five-year-old, who's now in kindergarten, pointed out, when we were first reading this book, he always wanted to rhyme it with, I don't know why she swallowed a fly. No, Daddy, I don't know why she swallowed a fly. But that's the, because this takes the same meter and the same, well, really, it's an adaptation of There Was an Old Woman Who Swallowed a Fly. Only it is There Was an Old Dragon Who Swallowed a Knight. And the dragon has an insatiable appetite that starts with a knight and moves all the way up to a castle. And for me, the it's always a question of what do you spoil and what don't you in this book, but there the payoff for me, the part that my son, I think the part that makes him return to this book over and over and over, that's the part I'm not going to spoil. The what happens when the dragon eats one too many things.
Yeah, that would be a spoiler, wouldn't it?
It's awesome, though. Okay, so this is your first picture book. I'm sure Yes. You're writing lots of picture books and enjoying all of the fun connections that you make when you start writing for children and realize that there's this massive, loving community out there doing the same thing.
Oh, yes. It's just awesome.
But so what brought you then to writing for children? Are you, I hear often from teachers that, and I think I personally myself too, being a librarian and coming from the classroom and reading aloud as much as I do, that for me there's sort of always been that bug in me that, well, what if one day I could hold up my own book to read to the kids, and how cool that might be. But what was the path for you? What brought you into writing?
Well, I always loved to write, but I didn't always want to be a writer. I wanted to be a PE teacher. And since I was in eighth grade, I wanted to. And so that is what I taught for the most part of my career. 26 years was how long I taught. And so when I would go around and pick up the kids for PE, I would a lot of times be at the door and be listening to the end of a lesson, and a lot of times it was the end of a picture book. And the kids were just so into it, you know, and just laughing or waiting to see what happened next. And so that kind of started my love for picture books. And then one year I read that John Sheska, Lane Smith's The Math Curse.
Yeah.
And it cracked me up, and I thought, oh, I would love to write some funny picture books. So this is like back in 1995. So I wrote one rhyming story one night in the bathtub, literally.
were you still teaching at the time?
Yep,
oh, great.
I was. And I submitted it to three publishing houses with no edits, no critique group. And of course I got three rejections.
Oh, but you got word back though. That's something.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't any, it was just a straight rejection. No notes or anything. No, are you crazy? So then I put that away. And then in the fall of 2010, I had quit teaching a year before, and I was driving around actually working for a book distributor selling books. And I put, over the course of 2 years, I put 68,000 miles on my car. And while I was driving, I would record ideas or stories or parts of stories in my iPhone. I wore earbuds, yeah. And then I get to the hotel at night or get home and I'd write them down. And then that led up to like the fall of 2010. Oh, I already said that. That's when it was. And that's when I decided, you know, if I'm going to do this thing, I better get with it. And so really, I think it was the teaching that brought me there, and the kids and the expressions on their faces.
Yeah.
But I felt like so much creative energy was going into teaching that I waited till after I retired. I just don't know how people do a full-time job and write, but, different paths for different people. I just didn't have that much energy.
That. Yeah, well, I mean, to be a PE teacher and to be moving, or I guess any teacher, and to be moving around as much as you are, and then I always think like, to teach all day and then to have any mental energy at all when you come home is just beyond me.
Right. I agree. Because teaching is a creative experience in itself if you do it right.
Yeah. I mean, it's this was one of these like listening to TED Radio Hour or something like that, where they were saying that really if you want to write or if you want to do creative work or if you want to do anything, the best time actually is to make yourself get up earlier, because you're actually sharper if you wake up earlier than if you try to save time at the end of your day. But I always think like, I'm so tired. I can't imagine like giving up more sleep.
I agree.
This is what happens though. But I mean, you did it though. You got a book to publication and it's wonderful. Is this one of the books that you had from early on, or did you go through is it like one of those processes that you had to write a lot to get sort of the bad ideas out of your system so that you knew when you would have a good idea? Does that make sense? Like refining, I guess.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I got a lot of practice books sitting on my computer that probably will never see the light of day. When I consider that I got in a critique group in early 2011, right after my decision in that fall before. And then I wrote this about a year and 4 months later. I remember exactly when I wrote it. It was in a poetry challenge in April of 2012. And it was not one of my earliest stories, but it was relatively early. But mind you, I did a lot of writing that year, a lot. There wasn't just one or two practice books. I wrote and wrote and wrote. That's what I did all day, every day.
Nice. And so, wow.
Yeah, I had to get a lot of those things out of my system, those bad books.
There you go.
And I still am. I still am getting those bad books out of my system.
I love the idea of writing just to get it out, so that way you don't have to deal with it anymore. It's out. It's bad. I can throw it away. But I had to just get it out of my head.
Yeah, but I keep them.
Do you?
Yeah,
you mine them. You never know. There might be a line. There might be a situation, right?
Yeah. You know, I hoard them.
I'm picturing even showing the kids, you know, on your author visits, showing the kids like, okay, so here's the one manuscript I got that was published. But look what I went through to get to there. Just showing them.
I should
them
do
the,
that. Like, I should show them all my folders. That's a good idea.
I mean, this is also the turning teaching on its head, isn't it? Because we always have the work you put in is the work that you get out. There's never piles and piles of drafts that lead to a final draft. Unfortunately, probably just because I don't know, something with our system that there's just no time in the day to do something like that. But the value of hearing people such as yourself visiting school saying that this is that you go through a lot of drafts and sometimes you write something and it's just not, it's not good enough. But at the other times there's times when you have to get the job done. And so you have to write to turn something in.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love this notion that, that you're, I'm just picturing you holding on to everything. But I love too that through these practice books, and I makes me think of Malcolm Gladwell with that 10,000 hour rule. If you're writing and writing all day long and doing that and just building up those hours of writing and strengthening that muscle, that that something as perhaps random as just a poetry challenge in April might end up being the one that your critique group says this is good. This has, you know, potential different from the other ones that you've turned in.
Yeah, it was that the fall before that, actually Christmas, I wrote a Christmas story and for one of Susanna Leonard Hill's Christmas contest. And I turned it in. And in the fall of 2012, in August, I got a phone call that I was runner up for the Barbara Carlin Grant. So I think if you're going to be writing and you can find some online challenges to become a part of and get that kind of practice and write a little bit to parameters like you're going to do within your genre, that it's super helpful. And that book hasn't sold, the Barbara Carlin one, but it's come close twice. And I don't know, I just think those online challenges in the KidLit community are very helpful and beneficial.
Nice. Yeah, I think having that deadline, having those parameters, I think that those all can benefit you. I mean, when you're putting limitations on yourself, when you're causing yourself to work under that sort of stress, I think that that's just part of the human condition that we end up working harder to thrive within those limitations. So that's great to hear that similar experience happened with you.
Yes. And, you know, even if we say we're going to write a picture book, we have freedom as far as subject matter goes, but we do have word count we have to watch and a whole lot of other things to write a good picture book.
Yeah, no doubt. There's
Writing a good picture book is intimidating. My word. I think about like all the books that I've read to children. And I, you know, this week, I because we're 3 days before winter break, I just grabbed some of my favorite books that I have in our library at home here that aren't out yet so that I could just give the kids a gift of like, here's something that will be coming out next year when we return and it's not out yet. But I read some of those and I'm like, my word. Well, anything that I read, it seems like, I don't know how people, how you get through. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. There's some stuff that's so good that it's almost intimidatingly good. Is that okay to say it that way?
Yes. I wish I could have been sitting there listening.
Oh yeah. That's sort of maybe the best experience though, of getting to be a teacher, of getting to be even just a parent reading aloud to the kid, is that opportunity to share something really special and have that moment of, this is really, really good. And you know it, and I know it. And that makes it really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So after you wrote There Was an Old Dragon, at that point, so you're in a critique group. Are you a member of like SCBWI, or did you seek out an agent, or did you submit directly to publishers like you did way back from the bathtub writing?
No, I didn't. I didn't do that. I am a member of SCBWI. I had joined that back in 1995 and let it lapse when I quit writing. Mm. But the minute I said I'm getting serious about this, that was the first thing I did, was get back with SCBWI, because the resource is just incredible. And, I like being a member of that. And then after I got that Barbara Carlin Grant runner-up, I had my eye on Aaron Murphy Literary Agency.
Oh, yeah.
And so I kind of broke a rule, sort of. I said, would you consider it a professional reference that I was runner-up for Barbara Carlin? And so that process started in August, and in April I signed with Tricia Lawrence in April of 2013. Mm-hmm. And she submitted my Dragon book in July, and 5 days later we had strong interest, but with requests for revisions. And you know, I'm a new writer, so they wanted to make sure I could hold up to that revision test, and so I did.
Oh, the test. You were on a test.
I felt like that kind of, and I don't blame them, you know.
Do you think people crack and they're like, I can't do it. Just take my book. I'm done.
Well, see, I always loved those standardized tests when I was a kid.
Did you?
Yeah, I was that kind of kid. I don't think I would now. They're just so much tougher. But, you know, so it was kind of a challenge for me. I can do this thing.
Yes. Well, that seems kind of fast, right? You sold it in, what did you say, like July of 13?
Yes.
And then it came out in August of 2015, 2 years. That's not too bad.
Well, we got interest in July. I think the actual deal was that fall. But yes.
Still, that's even faster then, right?
Yeah, I know. It was pretty much almost 2 years on the nose. So I felt lucky, because I know people that have got deals ahead of me, before me, and their books are still, they're going to come out in 16 or 17. And I feel very lucky about that.
Yeah. I mean, I've come to understand that that's sort of the way that, you know, publishing works, that they've got a certain number of books they publish each season, and they've got, they want to promote things along with certain other stuff. They didn't want, you know, they don't want like three Dragon picture books coming out at the same time, so they're going to pace them out or whatever.
Right.
But still, you're right, to write a book and then potentially be waiting years and years for it to come out. The anticipation would be crazy. But
yes,
yay, you did not have that case.
I know.
And
I
you
know.
Have not only that, I mean, Penny, like I'm dancing around it. Like I need to, like there's a certain time I need to wait to say it, but you have a book that's out and it came out in August. So just at the beginning of the school year, and already by now you've won an awesome rhyming picture book award from, can I say like the industry, from the Kidlit, people from the community? How do you say this?
Well, there's a group and it's called Rhyming Picture Book Month. And so there's a Facebook group book in conjunction with that. And they ended up having a conference, and beforehand they nominated rhyming picture books and narrowed them down and then scored them with a rubric and came up with a winner and two honor books. And the two honor books were What About Moose by Corey Rosen Schwartz and Rebecca Gomez. They co-authored that.
Yeah.
And then Interstellar Cinderella by Deborah Underwood.
Deborah Underwood, yeah, that's a great one, too.
So anyway, they presented this award at a conference on rhyming picture books. So it was fun. It was amazing. They named all the food after my book.
No way.
They did. They had burp juice and guacamole and salsa de squire and lady in waiting crackers. I mean, it was just, I took pictures of all of it. I just thought, this is so cute.
That's amazing. You went to not even like, those are the things I imagine during school visits. And that's what I think is the greatest when they like, when the whole school, you know, celebrates your book and does sort of fun things like that. And here you have adults that are your contemporaries that are, you know, picture book authors as well. And that are focusing specifically on rhyme, and they are celebrating you in that super fun way too. That's awesome.
It was so much fun. It was a great trip.
Okay, so wait, I have to ask you a question that perhaps in my brain at first was counterintuitive to this whole major conversation that we're having. But you wrote a rhyming picture book, but isn't like the thing that people say over and over when you're in like writing groups, they say, don't write a rhyming picture book. Or maybe not in a writing group, maybe publishers are the ones saying that, or agents or somebody. Is that because this is going to sound horrible? Okay, I'm sorry, people listening, don't judge me. But is it because a lot of people write bad rhyming picture books?
Yes. In fact, that's what I spoke on at that conference. My subject was why they get rejected. And, you know, they let the rhyme rule the book instead of the story. And then their meter is messed up, let me tell you. And I mean, I've critiqued some like that. And so, yeah, it's a challenge to get the story in there, the rhyme to go with the story and not let it all dictate and to come up with surprising rhymes. But, you know, that's kind of like a puzzle to me. And I've been a rhymer since I was a kid. I wrote poems in elementary school that my teachers were just like, this has perfect meter. I didn't know what meter was, but yay. And so I've always liked to do that. And I've always liked to sing. And I like the way to put, you know, I can put language together. It's just a challenge. And some of mine, when I first write them, they definitely would be rejected because I haven't put that polish on them that makes the meter perfect and has the surprising rhymes. And I think a big part of that is perseverance, that you just have to stick with it till you get it. And people that submit books before they've done that, or maybe they just don't have a real feel for the meter, that they're probably going to get a rejection. And I think that's why you hear that a lot.
It ends up being that it's not, don't write a rhyming picture book, or we don't want you to submit a rhyming picture book. It's much more that this is a not that it's a higher order skill, not to put one thing over the other, but that it's hard to do it well. And
yeah,
I can certainly attest.
Different skill.
Yeah. I mean, I can certainly attest to reading. There are still picture books that come out that don't have perfect meter or have predictable rhymes that are just, it just takes you out of the story. It makes you feel like I'm just reading a book to teach a kid how to rhyme, and that's not
right.
Fun.
Yeah, I understand. I've read some of those too.
You were talking about the surprising rhymes, and immediately, Penny, within seconds to my head came that rhyme that you have in your book about, I'm going to find it so I don't mess up the words.
Okay.
Here. There was an old dragon who swallowed a castle, swallowed it down to the last golden tassel. Yay. You use tassel in a rhyming picture book.
Well, that cracks me up because when I did my session at the conference, I spent some time showing them, how my book evolved. So, you know, right off the bat, I had, there was an old dragon who swallowed a castle. it was a hassle to swallow that castle. And I was just immediately like, no, 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 I'm not doing this. I am not having hassle for my rhyme. And so I went down every road possible. I kicked out the castle. I kicked out the moat because I wasn't going to have the castle. I had a groom who had a broom. I mean, I just went, I danced all around it. And I thought, no, I just can't do this. I've got to find the tassel line. And so I had the on a jester hat tassel, on a king's royal shoe tassel. I mean, I had everything upside down and backwards. Worked on it for days. And I finally got it. And it sounds so easy now. I think, why did it take me so long? But yeah, that's probably my favorite one that you just picked right there.
That, I love that notion that it sounds, the sentiment that you said, it just sounds so easy, because it does. But to know that that's how you know it's good. And that's how you know that it's that polish that pays off. It's like the way that people read picture books. Some parents read picture books and say, oh, I could write this book. This is so easy. I could write a book like this. But that's because it's so well written that you take for granted how effortless it seems.
My brother-in-law said that this summer about a Joan Yolen book. And I thought,
no.
Oh my gosh, don't say that.
Lightning will smite you. What are you
it's
doing?
So well written. That's a compliment to Jane. Because it's, you know, it's so well written that you just think this would be easy. She's just a genius.
It feels often like she perhaps is just a master orator, and all she needs to do is just scribe what she's writing or what she's saying. She just feels like such an amazing storyteller. I have yet to meet Jane Yolen, but she is quite a hero of mine, actually. It's fun that you bring her up.
I haven't met her either, but I called her Jane instead of Jane Yolen because I get her poems by email every day. Oh. So I think I could call her Jane, right?
Totally, totally. The kids would call her Jane. What makes it any different?
Oh, she is. She's a master, that's for sure.
So do you have, what's next after Dragon? Do you have other things? I'm sure you're still writing, but are you polishing things off? Are you getting stuff ready to submit?
I've got 4 out on submission, and I've sold another one to Random House, same editor and same illustrator.
Ben's going to be back. Yay.
Yeah. And it's called A Cooked Up Fairy Tale, and it's about a well-meaning chef who accidentally cooks up ingredients essential to famous fairy tales. And he cooks Snow White's apples, Jack's magic beans, and Cinderella's pumpkin, which causes, you know, it's kind of a mess in fairy tale land. But it all turns out okay.
Well, thank goodness. Yeah, spoiler alert, it's all okay.
A new fairy tale. It's kind of a fairy tale mashup, you know, with
love it.
Several fairy tales and then a new fairy tale to boot.
Is it rhyming?
It's not.
Cool. All right. I didn't know if you felt like that was your pull. We were bringing up Corey Rosenschwartz, and she so expertly rhymes her picture books. I know from talking to her before that sort of is her pull. She feels pulled to write rhyming picture books. That's the way she goes. And some people can write either that they perhaps feel like, well, I just am feeling like rhyme is not best suited for this story, but it'll be better over here or whatever. So good for you to be able to show both.
Well, the ones that are out on submission, there's 3 in rhyme and 1 in prose with a rhyming refrain.
All right.
And then the ones I'm working on right now to polish to try to get to my agent, neither one are in rhyme. So it does kind of depend for me, you know, which direction I'm going to go. And I can't tell you how I decide that. It just happens.
Do you see yourself writing all over the map, or is there sort of like a theme or a feel, some thread that runs through the books that you write?
Well, my agent says that I have a tendency to write books about things getting eaten, you know, food. So the dragon, you know, and then I'm ending up writing another fairy tale thing that it's all about food and cooking. And then out on submission, one of them's 2 of them are about things eating other things. And so I'm not sure. I do love food. I do love to eat. But I don't know if that's what you'd call a real thread or an obsession. I'm not sure.
It could potentially make for even more fun themed meals in your future, though, which is awesome.
That's true. That's true. And I think that that might be the end of the ones I can think of, even in my drafts pile that have to do with food.
Well, you never know, though, Penny. You might sit down tomorrow to write, and then that rhyming blueberry muffin is going to be screaming at you.
That's true. After all, Josh Funk wrote about French toast and pancakes.
I was just going to bring Josh up. Yeah, I know that he was a nominee alongside you for the rhyming. That's great. Yeah,
his Lady Pancake. His book's awesome. Yeah, it's a fun book.
It's very funny. Yeah, to think too that you get to be part of this group of rhyming picture book authors, which is a thing, which is great. And there's I have some really great friends that are in that rhyming group. Sudipta Barthankwalin is another one that comes to mind. And she's it takes a special talent to rhyme as well as you do. And certainly, Penny, you have that talent. You are award-winning in that way.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't like that we're at the end of our time, but we're at the end of our time together. And as much as I actually would love to sit here and wax ecstatic to you about dragons swallowing things and all the other ideas that you had, because my brain, once you started throwing out the tassel thing with grooms and the kings and all that, I felt like, oh, this should be like a game that we play. Let's list all of the things that Penny was brainstorming that once was in, you know, a version of a manuscript. But instead, I want to take you out onto the kickball field to ask a final question. Penny, I'm assembling an all-star Kidlit Dream Team kickball tournament, and I would love to know what one person, alive or past, from the Kidlit world you would want on your team and why.
Okay, now I have given this a lot of thought, probably way more thought than I should have. And so, because I listen to your podcast all the time, and it seems like there are two camps that when they answer this question. The first camp wants to win the game, and the second camp emphasizes quality time on the bench to visit with these Kidlit greats. So
you are not.
I've already told you I was a PE teacher, and I am super competitive, and so I really won't settle. Oh, sorry about that phone. For one or the other, and either one of those. So I'm going to go for both here, and. I'm going to tell you up front that I love sports, activity, exercise, all of that. And, you know, I did teach physical education. And in teaching these kids, my focus was for all the kids to leave my class feeling like winners and loving exercise. And so I de-emphasized athleticism and put this huge emphasis on movement and fun. And I actually think that's what makes great athletes, too, to have all of that going on. And in my classes, it took a lot of organization, inspiration, and motivation. So with that in mind, and also keeping in mind that I want to win on the field and on the bench, I'm going to choose Tara Lazar. And here's my reason. She has proven year after year that she can call in the troops for a successful month-long challenge to come up with 30 picture book ideas in 30 days. I figure if Tara can do this for a whole month, that she can handle an afternoon kickball game with her eyes closed. And I think she'll bring in all the organization, all the inspiration, all the motivation that we need. And I think that I'm going to leave the kickball field a double winner. I think I'll have the trophy and over the top bench time.
Have you met Tara yet?
I have met her.
She's
hilarious.
See, I only know her from interviewing her on this podcast, but she cracks me up. Yeah, I would want her on my team without question. She's amazing.
Well, think of all the people she's going to bring.
How many years have we done Paibo Inmo? Like five, six? Like she's, yeah, She's got legions of friends, and she's a Jersey girl, so that, even more so, she's got even more legions that way.
Oh yeah, I know I'm gonna win. Whenever we do this kickball game, yep, I'm gonna win.
Well, maybe we'll just need to make sure that it's on Tara's home turf. That way we can have her on our side.
I think that works.
Penny, thank you so much for joining me to chat tonight. It was great to talk to you. I wish you a ton of luck with There Was an Old Dragon Who Swallowed a Knight, reaching even more kids. I know that it is not only reaching kids, but reaching parents. It's made our bedtimes certainly a whole lot of fun. So thank you again for that.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad it's made bedtime fun. That's what it's all about.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton and The Best Book Ever This Week. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. Next up on Let's Get Busy, Kristen Kitcher talks about The Tiara on the Terrace, the sequel to The Wig in the Window. And later in the week, Michelle Schusterman shares the story behind Dead Air, the first book in the Kat Sinclair files. See you then, and thanks for listening.
We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.